Welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast from ExchangeWire, bringing you the latest news and views from the world of ad tech, media, and marketing.
Hello, and welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast. I'm Grainne Reid. I am Head of Marketing and your host for today. I'm delighted to be joined by Lindsay Rowntree, COO of ExchangeWire. Lindsay, welcome.
Hello, lovely to be here.
Alongside Lindsay, we've got John Still, Head of Content at ExchangeWire. John, how are you?
I'm good. Excited to be here. Thank you, Jean.
Amazing. Well, this week we're going to be discussing MENA becoming the world's fastest growing digital advertising market as spend reached $8.185 billion in 2025, as well as Google versus the CMA and UK ad exports, which hit £19.4 billion. So first up, the MENA digital advertising market hit $8.185 billion in 2025, representing 17.8% year-on-year growth, according to the latest industry report released by the IAB MENA at the member event on the 8th of June. Nizreen Ghazal, chair of the IAB MENA board and chief digital officer at Rotana Media Services, commented, "This report highlights the continued evolution of the region's advertising market. MENA remains one of the fastest growing digital and advertising regions globally, demonstrating the ongoing shift of audiences, content consumption and advertising investment towards digital channels." Lindsay, I'm going to come to you. What do you think are the biggest categories in the region?
I think that it's fascinating to see stats like this come out as to kind of like, it's really, really promising for the region. Like it's showing such buoyancy. And it's very, very interesting to look at the areas where there's growth, but where there's growth also what that growth actually looks like. So I think retail has been called out as a specific area to watch, like 40.5% year on year. So it's been flagged as the fastest growing channel, which is fascinating. And the MENA region in and of itself has a fascinating retail infrastructure. It's very, very different from what Europe looks like. Specifically, you know, that you've got things like the super apps. There's also kind of a big focus on physical in-store retail. And so trying to tie those things in together and looking at like attribution beyond last click when it comes to retail is a really fascinating area that I think is going to be big for that region, because obviously you've got, you know, the super apps like Talabat, like Careem, that they all represent a kind of a really interesting way of being able to target people, being able to, is, you know, a bit like sort of Asia with the super apps over there. It represents a really interesting opportunity for brands to be able to get in front of people in a way that you just sort of can't in Europe. And we've seen some interesting takeovers from brands that are trying to take over certain apps, like certain super apps, that I think shows you kind of what the opportunity is. And there's so much more that can happen, and the kind of the infrastructure of like a retail media network in that region will look very, very interesting and quite different from how it would maybe look and operate in Europe. The other interesting one that I think is fascinating is specifically CTV. 31% increase year on year, but I want to caveat that with a recent article that we published on ExchangeWire. It was an interview that Charlotte McLenny, our APAC and MENA editor, did with Tom Cogan from Assembly Global. And he points out that, yes, okay, there is massive growth in this area, but actually the majority of the budget in this region still goes into YouTube, into Facebook, and let's start that again, goes into Meta and Google, obviously within that Facebook and YouTube. But I think that that just shows you that the majority of the CTV budget is going into YouTube. And actually another interesting point that came out of that was that something like only 10% of viewers in the region are watching ad-supported streaming platforms using ad-supported subscription models versus something like 80% in the US. So the opportunity to actually get in front of people in a CTV environment is far lower outside of the YouTube environment. And I think that's really interesting because it represents an opportunity, because I think that, you know, what is happening, what we've seen happen in this region, certainly, and in this market, is that ad-funded models have grown massively. People have sacrificed, you know, watching ad for saving money. And we might well start seeing a similar sort of trend in the MENA region as well. Certainly, you know, maybe not the entire region, but certainly certain markets. And I think that that will represent a huge opportunity for advertisers to get in front of people in a different way, because YouTube is massive. YouTube is growing. YouTube will always be massive. But I think there's definitely represents other opportunities out there. And when you speak to people in the region, you know, there's certain industries. It's an interesting one, because obviously travel is a bit, travel is kind of one of the biggest industries probably in MENA. And we're seeing a quiet period, you know, as we enter summer. And obviously, you know, there's been some some stuff going on politically that's caused a drop in travel going forward. But if we look at kind of where ad spend's going, other comments that we've had in recent Exchange Web pieces have been like, you know, what's interesting about the MENA region is that we're seeing a massive influx of data. But I think it's fascinating to see kind of what data will bring to it as they start to look beyond last hit attribution, look beyond putting all their money into the likes of Meta and Google. There's going to be some really interesting things open up.
And John, what are your thoughts on this too? Because obviously Lindsay has touched on several key points and categories that are of huge interest. But yeah, are you kind of in the same agreement?
Yeah, Lindsay's covered all the points I made notes on.
I'm pleased to be of service.
So I'll just tick off my Tom Cogan quote. That was good. 10% non-subscribers.
I had that as well. So yeah, thanks.
Yeah. I love that we're just all reading the same stuff.
Lindsay's doing our job for us.
Yeah, well, no, I think Lindsay did cover an awful lot. I think the point about data is one that's really well made for the region. It's such a data-heavy region and there's such a big focus on that. We've talked a lot on the site about first-party data in the region, how focused it's helping retail media and quick commerce become in particular. I think the super apps, again, is another really good point. It's, you know, it's the data-rich and such an easy, quick way for people to transact. And it's funny how different they interact across the different regions. All my notes have been covered off.
Well, I guess if we look at the 17.8% year-on-year growth, what do you think that means about the maturity of the MENA ecosystem compared to other global markets?
It's really encouraging for the region. And, you know, the fastest growth globally, that's quite an accolade at the moment. It shows how much investment and faith is being put in the region.
I think we can also say it is not mature.
No, I think that's totally fair. And we've been, you know, in the conversations we've had about the region, it's, you know, it is looking to grow. That's the thing. It is growing. It is not a mature market. There's a lot left to be done. Out of home is a really interesting and on that front because out of home is very popular. Definitely. Programmatic out of home, less so. And that's another growing, huge growing market. I think the fact it's so fast in its growth speaks volumes to the fact that it isn't a mature market, but it certainly has grand ambitions to become so and is heading in the right direction, I think, even in, I think we can also say, particularly turbulent times.
Yeah, I think we can say that. What also was interesting for me was that Egypt being called out as kind of one of the biggest markets for growth. And I think that if you look at the makeup, there's like a huge throng of digital first natives in the Egypt market. And it actually kind of the makeup of it looks a little bit like India did a decade ago. So we're going to see huge activity happening in that market. And it's going to be definitely one to watch and definitely kind of probably more on people's radar than it ever has been before as a huge growth market for the region. But I think generally the region, as we know, it fascinates us and we see a huge opportunity there. You know, we're planning on running ATS Dubai in November unless travel restrictions say otherwise. It's definitely our intention to kind of be over there in November. And, you know, we've got our own CEO, Rachel Smith, talking at the IAB MENA event in September alongside IAB Tech Lab. She'll be presenting on stage. So there's, you know, there's lots of really good conversations happening and so many interesting things coming up, and everyone we speak to is really buoyant and bullish about the market. And that, yes, okay, we've had some very turbulent few months and we're still, you know, not quite sure kind of what direction that's going to go in, but it there still seems to be real positivity, and these numbers, obviously 2025 numbers, show what opportunity there is in the region, and certainly within certain industries, like there's massive areas of opportunity, and it's very exciting.
Yeah, no, it is. It's very exciting. And we're certainly looking forward to ATS Dubai.
Certainly are.
Yes. Definitely.
Well, I'm going to move us on to our next story. Under measures announced by the UK's Competition and Markets Authority, the CMA, publishers must be able to control whether the material appears in AI-generated features, receive clearer information about how their content is used, and gain access to more detailed performance metrics. Google will also be required to improve attribution in AI search responses and allow publishers to opt out of content being used to fine-tune AI models without having to remove themselves from traditional search results. In response, Google said it is testing new controls that allow website owners to manage how their links and content appear in AI-powered search experiences. John, do you think this will offer more protection to publishers in their AI era? Yeah.
That was very hesitant.
Okay. Yes.
It is hesitant because always this is double-edged sword, two sides of a coin here to discuss. It does. And in principle, I love to see it. It's, you know, anything that is putting weights and measures against the tech giants in order to protect publishers and make sure that they still have, you know, ownership of an audience that they've crafted over the years, that they've really put the work in to create, that they are not being simply allowed to be bypassed by an AI overview, I think is incredibly positive. And Google have reacted quickly, in fairness. They've said, okay, this is what we are going to do to allow the opt-out. And, you know, it's also a tricky one because there is the potential that opting out of the AI overviews reduces your visibility even beyond the zero-click web that we're all heading, that we're barreling towards. That not being in an AI overview doesn't mean that all of a sudden people are still going to be going to your website. It just means that you won't even be referenced at all. So if you are, you know, we've talked a lot recently. I talked to Mimo Palmieri last week on the Coffee With about how publishers need to position themselves as media brands now. It's about, you know, the audience you've crafted and the, and we had Jess Treasure, who writes for us. She's our columnist, also talked about why fame and and people's knowledge of your brand is still so important in the AI search era. Like, for, you need to be involved in this stuff to be recommended by it for your audience to still find you. So I absolutely praise the ruling and the rules and any guardrails and structures being put in place to help publishers still get traffic, basically. But the opt-out itself, like, I wonder how long that's just stemming the tide for.
Yeah. So we've been waiting for this for a long time, or something along these lines, yeah, to happen. But Lindsay, yeah, what are your thoughts on the update?
Yeah, I agree with John. This is very positive. And it's, and as you know, as John said, it's great that Google have reacted so quickly. And, you know, I think the compliance has happened within 9 months, but it's expected that we'll start to see certain things happen much, much sooner than that. But I totally agree. Like, I think that this goes a way to solving an issue that we have in this moment right now. But will we have that same issue 3 months down the line as AI keeps evolving, as our use of AI keeps evolving? As John said, what will this do to visibility? If you're not appearing in AI overviews, that's an interesting, yeah.
Haven't heard of that before.
No, it's a new one I'm trying out. Let me know what you think of it. Because if you like it, I'll keep on saying it. AI overviews, I'll go back to the original word for now though. AI overviews, as long as you're kind of sourced and linked and everything else in AI overviews and in search results, there is a massive visibility play here. And I think that the argument has long been, if we think back to the days of Google News, the argument's long been that really helps the long tail, but it doesn't really do anything for the premium publishers. And the premium publishers, their visibility will retain. They're still doing very well. They're still kind of seeing growth, well, not growth. They've still got a loyal base audience, and they still have strong subscription, subscribed users. But what does the future of that look like? Because, like, first and foremost, Gemini is not included in this. So all of that, that's a big thing straight away. So actually, as usage of Gemini increases, as people kind of use it alongside the likes of ChatGPT and Claude and Perplexity, or replace it, like, I was having a chat with someone recently who was saying, I've got a Google phone, like, I don't know why I'm not using Gemini. I really should be, because it makes sense, because it's all integrated. I was like, yes, you probably should be. That would make a lot of sense. So that's going to, you know, and have you seen the Gemini ads at the moment? Gemini, you know, they've got Carrie Kane ads. I've listened to podcasts where I've been having Gemini, like, people on the podcast having relevant kind of Gemini search queries within the ad. Gemini are going big, certainly around the World Cup. There's going to be a massive increase in usage in Gemini, I think, as people kind of realise, oh, it's actually pretty good, and it works the same way as all the others. And I already use Google across all my stuff, so it makes sense for me to use Gemini as well, specifically as an LLM. That, you know, ties in with, so this is only one part of the puzzle. They can still appear, turn up, they can still lose traffic to Gemini, as they are still losing traffic to the other LLMs as well. This is only one part of the problem. And as the overall search industry, Google search industry, kind of reduces as people go to LLMs instead, is that really kind of fixing the problem, or is it just kind of like masquerading it for now? I don't know yet. And I think that we need to, and you mentioned branding. I think branding is so important here. So yeah, so a few months ago, I think it might have been the Christmas episode, Rachel brought up the fact that for publishers, branding will be as important as it is for brands. And actually there'll be an overlap in terms of them trying to be visible to everybody to try to kind of remind them that these things still exist. And I think that that's going to be a huge challenge. And she's now laughing. And she just starts corpsing for no reason, I assume. So for listeners, let's not cut this out because I can't be asked anymore. But for listeners, we just had Rachel and Zara trying to remove a giant water cooler from behind us in the office. And now I'm trying to remember what I was talking about, and G can't keep a straight face. So this is all going very well. But anyway, so branding will be as important for publishers as it will be for brands. And I think that the overlap there is going to be very, very interesting. What does that look like? And, you know, we talk about the funnel a lot, like the collapsing of the funnel and looking more at it more kind of a flat journey instead. Well, actually, will whatever LLMs and whatever kind of this looks like, I've really gone on a tangent from the CMA story, however, like, what does that look like? Will branding become ever more important, and will the funnel actually return in some way, because everyone's trying so hard to get people in the first place? There'll be an element of that versus the kind of, you know, the agentic web doing it all for you. I guess my point here is that from a publisher perspective, this is a really, really good outcome, and it's a really positive outcome, and it will and publishers will be very happy about this. But it does, like, there's no sort of clean path here. Either you lose visibility or you retain a bit of your credibility and principle that your work isn't being, your content isn't being scraped for nothing, to be kind of loosely viewed in like a 2 second AI overview that no one ever remembers and kind of can't remember what they even searched for in the first place. So there's that kind of aspect of it, but I think there's no clean path. I do question how long this will remain relevant and an issue, because actually the LLMs will become the bigger issue, and that's going to be an even more interesting case as to what does that future look like if we try and block the ability for the LLMs to be able to scrape any data. Like, for example, funnily enough, I was using Claude to help me kind of pull together all my different sources. And I had a BBC article that I wanted it to include to pull together my sources in one place. And I put the BBC article for this story, put the BBC article link into Claude, and it said it was blocked. So I was like, well, it's interesting, because already, you know, the irony wasn't lost on me that it was blocked for this specific story. But already we're seeing publishers do that. Will that cause a blocker? Because if I only want to use an LLM to find my sources, will I go to the BBC to try and find it in other ways? Or will I be like, well, okay, fine, sod that. I will find something else instead. So there's so many different things for publishers to have to think about right now. It's mind-boggling, honestly. And, you know, I speak as a publisher ourselves, like, it's mind-boggling for us too. That I do question, this is great, this is really positive, but what is the next stage of this is what I guess I'm getting at. And that was a really long-winded way of trying to get to that point. But I got there in the end, via some minor disruptions.
Minor, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The office being rearranged.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, and I guess there's probably going to be several different iterations of this over the 9 months that they have to implement it. Yeah. And I guess we'll see what happens as things progress.
Yeah.
I guess the other thing just to touch on is around, is this intervention setting a precedence for others globally? As in, is Google being made an example of?
Potentially. I wonder, and this is my cynical hat that I'll put on for this.
It suits you.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's I wear it nice, always. It's yeah. A jaunty cynical yeah. hat yeah. I wear often on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And it's something from you said, Lindsay, like, Google have acted uncharacteristically quickly yeah. here. Like, to make sure that they are...
Sure, we'll do it. Why not?
So, yeah, which suggests to me that they have thought the same thing you have, which is fine, opt out of AI overviews. Everyone uses LLMs anyway. Yeah. So,
like, is that where their efforts are going?
Yeah, it's, yeah. You know, it's like, okay, we'll give them a little...
Based on the Harry Kale advert of him doing some barbecuing.
Yeah.
I think that might be the case, yeah.
It's like, we'll give you this shiny new penny and you give us that nasty, rusty old pound that you don't need anymore. It's that kind of trade-off. Yeah. Like, we'll give them that as a little, and then they'll be satisfied. That was an interesting point. And then also, Shirley Marshall, our columnist, wrote for us today a really nice piece about the CMA ruling and what it means for Google and stuff. And she brought up that kind of age-old question about payment and exposure, which is what this basically is for publishers. It's the only... Exposure doesn't pay my mortgage. Like, when does visibility actually ever convert to value? And publishers really need to think about that, like whether, you know, many will want to opt in for the same brand reasons we've said, but does that visibility in the zero click world, what does it actually mean? So, I mean, you could think yourself into a massive hole about how to play this and the chess of it all, but it's...
And publishers are doing that. Like, yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? Publishers don't really know what's going to happen next. And things like this are really, really good. But are they, like I said, are they masking what's really going on under the hood? And this is a plaster, a sticking tape over kind of, as you say, like, have Google reacted so quickly because, well, they go, yeah, sure, whatever, because we're putting all our money into Gemini. And I think that the future of the publisher absolutely remains to be seen. Like, the content and the need for quality journalism will 100% all exist, but how we consume it will like undoubtedly change. There's no way it won't change. So what does that look like in terms of how I then consume content from a publisher going forwards? And is a publisher trying to stop me from doing that via an LLM? Is that just kind of like I'm trying to think of a Shirley Marshall style analogy, but I just can't because I haven't got her skill set. but is that kind of, you know, just closing the stable door after the horse has bolted, basically? Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, well, you're going to have to go to the BBC from now on. You won't be able to use Claude.
No.
Yeah. Right, a quick word about something you need to put in your diary. July 8th, Sands Expo and Convention Centre, Singapore, ATS Singapore 2026. And this year it marks 15 years of ExchangeWire bringing together the people who actually run this industry in Asia Pacific. We've got some great speakers lined up. Shweta Jam, e-commerce and digital marketing director at Haleon, making the case for where retail media has to go next, past the hype and into actual probable business outcomes. Jonathan Lim from MediaCorp and Zoab Gafoor from Havas Media going head-to-head on what omnichannel measurement genuinely looks like across APAC's fragmented media landscape. Jill Wickop from IAB Tech Lab on what agentic media buying means for publishers right now. And CN Lee from Publicis Media on the creator economy and where AI content fits into your media mix. Not to mention, this year, his first time at ATS Singapore, Index Exchange CEO Andrew Casale will be on stage in conversation with ExchangeWire's Kieran O'Kane. He's probably the most interesting person in ad tech right now, so it's definitely not one to miss. That's before you factor in the rest of the people on stage and in the room. Senior buyers, sellers, traders and decision makers all in one building for one day. The conversations on the agenda are the conversations APAC needs to be having. Retail media's proof of performance problem, identity in a cookieless world, how publishers rebuild reach when AI is reshaping how audiences discover content, whether APAC's future super apps are about to rewrite everyone else's rules. This is not a passive event. This is where the industry figures out what is actually going on and what to do next, and you need to be in the room. Get your ticket now and the link in the show notes, or go to exchangewire.com/events. ATS Singapore, July 8th. See you there. Okay, well, I'm going to move us on now to our third story for the week. The UK advertising industry recorded a new export milestone in 2025, with overseas sales of advertising services reaching £19.4 billion, according to a report from the Advertising Association and Kredos, making advertising one of the fastest growing UK service exports and reinforcing the country's position as the world's second largest advertising exporter. The sector also generated a £4.2 billion trade surplus, with the US remaining its largest international market, accounting for £5.5 billion in exports. The report argues that UK advertising plays a broader economic role by helping businesses compete internationally through creative, strategic, technological and data-driven services. John, what does this UK's £19.4 billion in advertising exports tell us about its global competitiveness?
Yeah, we're really good at advertising. Like, we have such a strong advertising industry, and I say that as someone I've lived in a few different countries and consumed advertising in those places. And in terms of creative quality and what's on offer, the UK, we really do advertising well. There's a lot, you know, a lot of creativity goes into it. Our adverts are, as these numbers show, like, we are renowned around the world for what the industry offers. And we should be proud of it. And it is a huge British export. You know, our culture industry in general is an incredible. Our film industry, we punch well above our weight in terms of our size. And I think this is, it is good to see these numbers, and I'm not surprised, because we do have a really, an incredibly tough time in a challenged industry at the moment. But our ad industry, and that includes ad tech, like, we have such a strong foundation for the industry and do so well on a global scale, I think.
Are you impressed by these numbers, Lindsay?
I was very impressed. I was very buoyed to see such numbers, because it's not a part of the industry, or kind of when you look at ad spend numbers, it's not a part you think about, actually, how much media is being run, managed from the UK as a hub, to be bought in other markets. You know, that's huge. You know, when I was agency side, I used to run loads of different campaigns in different markets. Like, it's a really huge part, certainly for media agencies. Like, London is seen as a huge hub, not just for Europe, not just for EMEA, but for other areas as well. And the fact that number's so big shows you that's still kind of going very, very strong. And I think the creative angle that John talked about, you know, even back in the day, you look at some of the kind of the biggest ads you would have seen, like the memorable TV ads you would have seen in on American TV channels. When you kind of look at the who made them, it was often the big UK creative agencies like Saatchi & Saatchi and BBDO, all these different ones. Like, they were absolutely massive, and it shows that we still, you know, pack a massive punch given our relative size, and that's really interesting and really fascinating. And on the creative side of things, I also want to touch on kind of a conversation that we've been having a lot internally at the moment. And John, I know you're writing a piece on this at the moment as well, so it's very interesting to kind of unpick this a bit. But looking at creative and queer tech, as it's called, like, sort of the creative tech industry, because I think that what's maybe missing from the conversation, and I thought that, you know, there's the UK minister, or the minister for tourism, media and creative industries, Ian Murray, has kind of said he wants to make queer tech as big as fintech in this country, and as basically kind of guaranteed that there's going to be massive investment into that industry. And we need to kind of, as an industry, kind of help the government define what that looks like, because if we make that definition clear, it will again help us be able to grow this export number and also internal ad spend even more. When you look at the creative industry, you need to also look at all the pipes that service it. And actually, you can't have a creative industry without the advertising industry, without the ad tech industry. So we need to be seen of as fundamentally important to the export of creative advertising, to the export of creativity and internal creativity, as the actual creative industry themselves. And I think that that's going to be really interesting to unpick what that looks like and how we kind of help define that almost. Because I think, you know, as things are changing so much, and we just talked, you know, about the rise of LLMs, what that means for publishers, what creative looks like, what advertising looks like, how the advertising gets made, gets pushed out, gets bought, gets sold, is going to look quite different. And there's so much innovation happening in advertising at the moment, from the pipes that make it to the things that the consumers see, or you know, going down the line to the things the LLMs see. You know, what does that look like? And I think there's a massive push for us, and it's incumbent upon us to ensure that we are communicating that really effectively, and helping the UK government, helping kind of just the industries and the trade bodies in general kind of define that and include us in that category correctly.
Yeah, totally agreed. It's, you know, the content, the creativity, the, you know, as we've seen in these numbers, this huge industry that we have and this massive global exports we have, all underpinned by the ad tech pipes. Like, they, you know, this is, the ad tech industry is how this wonderful content is monetized. This is how we do this at scale. And the UK's got such a strong industry across DSP, SSP, everything. Like, the UK is a hub. London is an ad tech hub. Farringdon is an ad tech hub, given the companies that are here. And we are, you know, the invisible side of it. We are the pipes that people don't see, that bring this creativity out in all the different formats we've discussed today, in retail media and CTV, all these, you know, these places that content's consumed. Mm. And to separate us from that isn't, you know, we shouldn't be. We are part of Createch, absolutely no question. Yeah. Like, the distribution side is as important as anything. And yeah, this will be my op-ed piece about why ad tech is...
I'm very excited about it, actually. Oh, yeah. I am. It's really fascinating.
No, I've not sat for quite some time and put an actual genuine op-ed together, and it's been really nice to do it, and something that I'm quite passionate about, that, you know, this is important, and the government's Createch message and the mission around the world certainly shouldn't exclude our ad tech pipes from it, because we're an important part of it.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, and you look at kind of the markets we're looking to export to. Obviously, US is makes perfect sense, but also Saudi Arabia and the Gulf, Africa, and obviously kind of other parts of Europe as well. Like, there's huge opportunity for us to help grow those regions as well, kind of in what we're doing. You know, we talked in the first story about MENA and the fact that the market, the advertising market, is not mature there. There's an opportunity for us in terms of the export growth and the kind of what we mean, what that looks like, to help with that maturity and kind of help bring those things forward. So, you know, as an industry, there's a lot riding on us to kind of get this right. And that, again, that's why the definitions of this are really, really important, because we can do some good in the world. We really can.
Yes. I've removed the jaunty cynical hat and replaced it with the jaunty positive hat.
Jaunty positive hat. It's jaunty the other direction.
It's the other slant.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, yes. Nice to finish on that note.
Yes.
And we're looking forward to your piece when it's published, John.
Thank you very much.
See how things go for the next quarter, and at the end of the year, see what the surplus is looking like, because it's very impressive as it stands from last year. Great. Well, thank you both for joining me, Lindsay, John.
Thank you very much.
Great to be here.
And thank you all for listening. That's it from the MadTech podcast this week.
You've been listening to the MadTech podcast, brought to you by ExchangeWire.